I love the enthusiasm already after a long day of interviews. I'm ready to go.
Oh,
you, Debbie.
I'm so happy to talk with you again. I mean, we did Robert the Bruce. We did Murder at Yellowstone City. You took a little vacation, maybe worked on another film. So I was going through Richard withdrawals. So
you're lovely. That's fantastic.
I am so thrilled to speak with you again, Richard. And oh, you gave me another Western. Oh, bless your heart.
Thank you. It means a lot to me. It's my favorite genre.
Oh, I know how much you love Westerns, as do I. And this one is really exciting. There's a complex narrative happening. Of course, it's a period piece. That wonderful 1870s Montana that everybody has grown to love even more, thanks to Taylor Sheridan. And these performances are so incredible. Your casting here, Richard. I mean, you bring in Pierce. You've got Samuel L. Brandon Lessard just pops off the screen. But what's really thrilling about watching Brandon is his interactions with Samuel and how the character of St. Christopher influences and manipulates Henry. That is such a delicious thing to watch unfold. I just love it. Love it.
Yeah, the working with actors of this caliber, particularly during the strike when we shot, was a dream come true. I mean, Pierce, I grew up with Pierce's Bond. I told him I still have his Nintendo game, GoldenEye. Samuel Jackson, obviously, Pulp Fiction, I think, came out when I was 15. But then Veronica Ferres, Cory Anchor Pilcher, New World, Terrence Malick, and then people like David Arquette and Tim Daly, Ethan Peck, and then Brandon, who I've known since he was a kid. We're very lucky to have such an ensemble during the strike. It was very exciting, but I also had to put my big boy pants on because if you want to give Pierce Brosnan and Samuel Jackson some direction, you better know what the hell you're talking about, right? So it was exciting for me. Also, being up here in Montana, it just adds so much. It's another character. The locations.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah.
This entire cast, is each person is popping up. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm going to really date myself for you, and I think you know how old I am anyway, or thereabouts. I worked on Remington Steele with Pierce.
He's been a heartthrob for 50 years.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to work on about 10 episodes of Remington Steele, and he's still just as fantastic now as he was then. He still has that twinkle in his eye that he brings here. He brings it to the sheriff. There's always something behind the eyes. He's always holding something back, and the wheels are turning in his head, and you really see that unfold here as he deals with all the nut jobs running around this town.
Yeah, he crafted his backstory from Ireland, and we wanted to tell an immigrant story. It's particularly relevant right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll notice Irish, Scottish, German, Native American, African American. We tried to tell a true story of America after the Civil War. But Pierce has something that is, he has an aura about him. And he was carrying a sadness in this film that I think he tapped into from his own former life. And being an Irish immigrant coming after the fat famine, to America, and we didn't want good guys and bad guys, and it was the same with Samuel Jackson. Like, he's just coming. He might be perceived as a bad guy, but he's a former slave that got robbed, and so everything he does is relevant. Is motivated, and he just became this master manipulator, like a puppeteer. And so to have those guys, you know, just doing their best stuff, making the words on the page better, making the characters on the page better, was, you know, it was the best time I've had in my career.
Well, I have to say, watching Samuel as St. Christopher, he's a kick in the ass. You love seeing him manipulate people. You enjoy because of the glee that he has when he's doing it. And you really let that come through, which it adds a whole other element to what many may think is just a traditional Western. This is anything but a traditional Western. It's because of all the shades of gray and the moral ambiguity that you bring out. I'm really curious because, number one, you've got the location, as you said, that is also a character in the film. Working with Thomas Scott Stanton. Now, I saw a little indie that Thomas did called Match. I saw it when it was still on the festival circuit a few years ago. And so creative and so inventive with lighting and lensing. So it tickled me to see him working with you on a project this big. So I'm curious about your collaboration with him and how you developed the visual grammar so that you could celebrate, you could balance the widescreen panoramic vistas with extreme close-ups. You've got some beautiful ECUs happening here, as you always do, Richard. You've got the natural lighting, but we feel the texture. And this town, this world feels very alive. So I'm curious about how you developed the visual grammar on this one.
I'm happy you mentioned the cinematography because Thomas Scott Stanton was the very first friend I made when I moved to LA. For a very simple reason, I had shot the first film ever made on the Red camera in Australia, mm-hmm. and he was one of the few owners of the Red camera in LA. And so we got introduced. And it turns out we lived around the corner from each other in Beechwood Canyon in L.A. And we just became best buds, camera nerds, right? And then as he's worked his way up, we've had similar trajectories. He's done a lot of movies now. Mm-hmm. And timing hasn't worked out in the past for him to shoot other movies of mine, but we've been waiting for it. The light up here is in Montana is just spectacular. And so we chose to shoot in the fall, which is rough for continuity because we had a snowstorm, so you see the snow in the film as well.
Yeah,
but how fantastic to have the fall with the color of the leaves, and like when Sam Jackson and Brandon are by the river, or they're running up to the snow to try to get running cub. To have all those different landscapes and locations was something that he and I wanted to do to make the film as big as it could. As it could look, mm-hmm. To have the breath coming out of the actors' mouths to really feel, because there's no studio, there's no set on our film. Most, if not all, Westerns are partially, or if not all, shot on a set. And so we really leaned into the light and the locations. And Thomas, being a buddy of mine for 20 years, it was just like we speak each other's language when it comes to the camera. And the look.
It is so beautiful. I love the texture. It has a very tactile nature to it. And I think it's because you're going up and down the terrain. And we've got some flat out open areas where they're on horseback. But then I love as you're going up the terrain, going up to Running Club. And we're seeing some snow on the ground. And it's very believable. Because of the fact that you go in higher elevations, and we don't know how high up that elevation was. So it's very believable that, yes, there was snow at that time of the year when you were filming. But I'm curious how challenging the filming was logistically, because tell me you're not dragging dolly track up and down.
No, you're right. No, and that is, it looks real because it is real. So it's fascinating here in Montana. The weather can change so fast, particularly in September and October when we shot. But no, we are, like, it's hardcore. But the crew was so happy and worked so hard. And no, that we dragged everything up and down the mountains. That's what we do. I've always loved that. Like you talked about Robert the Bruce, like we've been doing it forever. I love it. And I miss winter westerns. Like, it used to be, think about Legends of the Fall or Butch Cassidy or The Revenant recently or Pale Rider.
Mm-hmm.
The weather, I get a bit bored of the western, desert western, you know, the New Mexico sand or Texas western. I love seeing the northwestern western.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we really lean into with everything we do up here.
As beautiful as the exteriors are, and just with every frame, even in the town itself, you're getting the vistas of the mountains behind it. So everywhere you look, it's beautiful. But then when you look at the town itself and the configuration of that and the distances, such as from the sheriff's house to the town proper, the church, the bar, the realism, the authenticity really takes hold. So what did you and your production designer, Tesla Hastings, have to do to really bring this to life on the personal level for each of these people? Like in the bar, you can see that, you know, Sam is, he takes great pride in his bar. You can tell the bottles of alcohol behind him are clean. Not something you see that often. But it's all these little details. And then what Sarah does within the home and the decoration and the furniture, it's beautiful. So the production design is very important here, as is that set, the set dress. So what were your conversations with Tesla like in bringing this world to life on an intimate level?
Yeah, Tesla's an amazing designer, and she lives here in Montana, and she's very big on the historical accuracy and wants to create a set that feels right and props that feel right, so the actor has something to play with, because if the actor hasn't done a period piece before, it's very important that they walk into a space that doesn't, oh, you've got half a wall here to play with and the rest of it's a set. So our sets here, when we built the Yellowstone Film Ranch, it was built for this story. So our sets here are 360. So, you know, Veronica Ferez, Sarah Dove, she can walk around her kitchen and go from place to place to place, get her props from here, do this, turn here, turn there. It's all shootable. In the bar, you mentioned Sam, Ethan Peck, who's a lovely, lovely man. He can. It's a fully functional bar. He can really walk around. That wallpaper is real. It's French. It was very expensive. the bottles are all, like, they are fully functional buildings. The church, mm-hmm. right? That is a real church. And you can see out the windows of all these buildings because they're in here. They're in Montana. None of it is green screen. And so Tesla did a great job of filling all of these rooms to make the actors, it's so much easier for them to fall into the world and for it to be believable if they can look all around them and not see a green screen.
Mm-hmm.
And texture is a great word as well that you mentioned before. All of these props and furniture, it's all real. It's all period accurate. Wow. Also having great scenic painters. Mm-hmm. We really invest in scenic painters, which is a forgotten art. But it's great in the Western to be able to get that to how they used to make a movie, particularly in that category.
Yeah, and I mean, and Tesla, I know you worked with her before on Murder at Yellowstone City. And then I also love what she did for The Old Way. And I know that she was invaluable to Mario Van Peebles for Outlaw Posse. He couldn't rave enough about her work that she did for him.
It's fantastic.
So
yeah, and you bring up a great we have fantastic heads of department, and Tesla's from Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And she does endless research on making sure it looks right. And I just think it makes everybody's job easier when they can know that what they're getting handed is real,
mm-hmm.
And they can trust it. She did a great job on Old Way. I remember the mercantile scene at the start of that.
Mm-hmm.
She has a fantastic eye. That's for sure.
She really does. Now we have a lot of action happening here. A lot of gunfights. We also have the horse chases. How adept was the cast at riding horses, or did you have to bring in stuntmen or wranglers to step in for those scenes?
Both. We always have stuntmen and wranglers, and we had the best. Dis Sharp was a stunt coordinator, and he's done James Bond as well. And we had Tyler Gainsford as our head wrangler, who's working with some of the best horse people in the world, people that have done War Horse, Planet of the
Wow.
Apes, Lord of the Rings, and it's really important to get top movie horses when you're going to get actors on them.
Yeah.
And then the actors gain confidence when the wranglers and the stunt people are at the top of their professions. Because it's very hard to convince agents to let their actors actually ride horses. But we had a cowboy camp here, and the actors, they all rode the horses for real. And it makes a big difference when you're not just seeing a close-up of an actor on a horse,
Yep.
or they're not actually on a horse. It makes a big difference where you can see that they're actually riding. So Pierce is riding, Sam's riding, Brandon's doing a hell of a lot of riding. And then in particular, Veronica Ferres is riding. She didn't have enough time in prep to do a lot of horse experience. So she bought a mechanical horse,
Oh
like
my
an
God.
equestrian aide, and was training because she didn't want her double to do her horse riding when she comes into town that night when the sheriff's away. She wanted to ride, low, like properly ride fast.
Yeah.
And so we had this cowboy camp. So each of the actors would do days in this cowboy camp when they got to know their horse. And they got their own horse. We weren't switching out horses. They got to have a relationship with the horses. And as far as the action goes, Giz was phenomenal. Him and I care greatly about geography in gunfights, knowing where the person is, where the gut bullet's coming from. So it's not just senseless violence, that you know
Right.
who's shooting and you know where they are. So when they're, if you think about our action sequences, whether it's running tub or you want to know where all these people are coming from. So it's not just faceless kills.
Right.
And so he did a great job of extending the shot. So you're holding on the shot long enough when Pierce comes sliding down the hill, or when they're on the roof in the church, or when they're on the roof in the house or surrounding the house. So you know where the bullets are coming from. And hopefully, because we care about even the bad guys, like the fantastic Benton brothers, right, who are really good bad guys. You care when they're shot one way or the other because you've got to know them. So there's no senseless kill. We would never hole in a kill on a character that you didn't already know that didn't mean something. And that's what we always try to focus on.
And I appreciate in watching a Western when the bullet is, when everything is happening directionally, that the physics, that line of sight of that bullet, the actor is then hitting themselves where that bullet actually is aimed at. So I always appreciate that. And I learned a lot of that from the old time stunt guys who were doing Westerns back in the 40s and 50s. That was a big deal for a lot of the veterans. That always be done that way. So it makes me happy to see that in your films. You have all
Happy,
this
appreciate that.
great footage. You've got these great performances. Now you're putting it in the hands of, oh my God, Lee Smith as your editor. I don't know how you pulled that one off, Richard. Wow. 1917, Dunkirk, Spectre, my God. How challenging was the edit on this one? Because this is not just a straightforward Western, and we have all this nuance, we have the complexities, and a lot of the images that Thomas has captured, we see the moral conflict within the eyes of our characters. So how challenging was the edit on this one with Lee to balance it all? So that we really see the moral conflicts, vengeance turned redemption, and the nuances of everything. Because you get it all here. You left no stone
Yeah,
unturned.
I'm happy you brought up Lee. I think he took pity on me as a fellow Australian, and as a young Australian. No, Lee's a legend, an absolute legend in the game. And whether it's Sam Mendes or Christopher Nolan or whoever, all the Aussie directors, he's been fantastic. He's doing the Beatles films now with Sam Mendes. I think he wanted to do a Western. Like, everybody wants to do a Western at some point in their career.
Yeah.
And what he was phenomenal at was, I used to be too hands-on in the edit because you think you know better. But you don't. Like, there's obviously a few directors in the world that do. But it's so good to lean on a legend and go, what do you think? And run with it. He's fantastic. He said to me, you know, the script is the script, and he loves the screenplay. But what you got is what you have. What you have in the can is what we have. So it doesn't help to talk about what was in the script. All that it helps to talk about is what you got in the can. It was a great lesson. It's a great lesson for me. So I learned a lot from him. We edited the film in Australia, which was great for me to get home. But the action, which we just talked about, was where he really came into his own because he's done so much. I mean, if you're deconstructing a Christopher Nolan film, turns out you're pretty good with knowing where people need to be standing and what the audience does and doesn't need. So he was brilliant. And the nuance, because it's a tight film, it's only 95 minutes, right? The nuance that he created and the beats that he chose to hold on, for us to still care about these characters, and I hope that we do in such a short amount of time with so many characters, is it a tribute to him, and it's a tribute to the art of editing. Because if we care about Running Cup and Sarah Dove and Brandon, his coming-of-age story, and Sam, and he's not a real bad guy, and Pierce, and his backstory, that's a lot of that is editing. Obviously, it's the writing, but get it done in 95 minutes and care about these characters is huge.
And, of course, let's not forget little Mabel, played by Edith Gray. She is a scene stealer.
That my daughter in the movie was amazing. She's a sweetheart. And both the kids do the Westerns up here with me. But Edie, Veronica, took a particular love to Edie, Veronica, who plays Sarah Dove. And that's actually one of my favorite sequences in the film when Samuel Jackson comes to the well. The tension in that scene, and with the child upstairs, Veronica did an amazing job in that, and that's the ultimate Sam acting class scene as well. I loved that sequence.
You could cut that scene with a knife. The tension is so thick, but I mean, Edie is just, she is just, the camera loves her, and obviously Lee liked looking at her too for the way he cut the film. So
exactly,
that made me happy.
Exactly.
Now, I know they're going to rip you away. They're going to disconnect us here in a minute. But before they do, unless you rip the phone out of their hands, but before they do,
these guys are the best. They've been fantastic.
I have to bring up Marco and Tristan Beltrami, father and son. We got a lot of father-son, father-children angst happening here in this film, Richard. I mean, Pierce has his two sons in the film.
Yes.
The story, you know, Henry starts his whole vengeance quest because of his father, a promise he made to his father at his hanging.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Marco and Tristan working together. We've got you and Edie working together. But I love the score here. They bring in the Western motifs, make it orchestral, but we feel with the instrumentation and with the melodies themselves, the motifs themselves, we feel the conflicts, the interpersonal conflicts, the internal conflicts, and we feel the environment. The music wraps us into that Montana 1870 world. So I'm curious what your conversations with Marco and Tristan were like and what you wanted musically for The Unholy Trinity.
Yeah, Marco is a blessing. And I was just talking about Pierce Brosnan introduced me to him, because like you were talking about with your theme of family, Pierce's kids and Marco's kids grew up together, went to school together. So it's amazing. It's beautiful. So we didn't want a genre melody theme. Marco is a genius, and his family and his whole team in Malibu are phenomenal. That's where we've recorded it. It wanted to be more atmospheric and less stereotypical for a Western, is mm-hmm. the best way to describe it. And so I learned also, like I learned with Lee, that I used to use temp music when we're editing movies, because you're in there in the edit suite for 10 weeks while the composer's still working right. And so you can't help but lay some music up to a scene. But it just kills you in the long run. And so he was very big on me not doing that and just waiting for the music, or using very, very early versions of his songs. Mm-hmm. And that was great, because I never got to hear anything but his music to the movie. And he has a way of making it quite emotional without it being on the nose, and quite action-packed without it sounding like cowboys and Indians. And just a gentleman of a man, and a beautiful family. And so that's what we've developed over the years, is a family of people that all are kind of similar. Trying not to be so stressed out, and trying to be super thankful that we get to make movies for a living, and trying to work with each other's families, so we're not apart from our own families for so long. And so Marco was just—it was an honor. Like with Lee, it was an absolute honor to work with him. I hope to do it again.
On every level, Richard, I love this film. You have left no cinematic stone unturned. It speaks to the heart. It speaks to man and the human condition. Just so well done once again. And what is this? I think the next film you're giving me is another Western.
I have a fantastic film that my wife wrote, speaking of family, called The Lovely and Dangerous, Lucy Cavanaugh. But I also have, which is a local Montanan story, but I also have a World War II film in the Netherlands called Wolfsburgen, that's going to be a departure from Westerns for me. It's a true story as well. It's a true Holocaust story. So we'll see. I'll keep busy, and I'll keep getting back to you. Oh. Because I love talking to you.
Well, and Richard, you know I love talking with you, and you also know I will see anything and everything that you do. And I do want to say to you, because I know that you're one of the executive producers on Rust. I have seen it. It is a fine film. It is really a well-done film.
We took that on post the accident.
Right.
Because the director, Joel, is a friend of mine, and they couldn't get a place to shoot it. So we tried to help them out. The screenplay was beautiful. I haven't seen the film. It's been such a terrible experience for so many people. But I've heard that it's a good film, and I hope that people find it however they can, because that's a long story, that one. That's a different phone call.
But I have to say, I have seen it, and there's so many press I know that won't see it. There's so many people I know, and they're making a big mistake, because it is a fine film. It has strong production values, and it's a good story. So...
Yeah.
I just want you to know how much I do like that one too.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'll let Joel know. You know, it was a long road for him. Eleanor and the new DP was a lot. It was a lot for them.
Yeah.
They were carrying a lot when they came up here, so I'm happy you liked it. Oh. I'll appreciate knowing that.
Richard, this has been another absolute delight. You have made my entire week. as you always do. And I can't wait to see whichever film you do next so we can talk again.
Great. Me too. Oh, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Debbie. Richard.
Appreciate it.
You go have a great rest of your day.
You too. Talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.